Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello again and welcome to the Work Report. This is episode 21 actually. I'm getting carried away myself. I'm sure I don't have to tell you lovely people that we have a very good reason to celebrate. Sunderland pasted Crystal Palace 4-0. Gave Sam Allardyce something to think about certainly, and of course Patrick Van Aanholt. So much for that better squad. So we'll just get started thinking about that and talking about that. Basically today we've got Gav with us. How you doing, Gav?
I'm now no longer afraid to leave the house because I support a rubbish team. I'm overjoyed.
Willing to wear the shirt on the bus. It's fine now. James, what about you? How you doing, buddy? He's got a concussion, so you'll have to bear with him.
Yeah, I might be a bit slow tonight with a bit of concussion, but yeah. Sunderland won 4-0, so everything's good in the world.
Yeah, something had to balance it out, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It couldn't just be a win.
And I thought I might have been hallucinating.
We've got Mickey Luff with us today. How you doing, Mickey?
I'm champion, mate. Happy clapping does pay off.
It does eventually. Law of averages states that you have to be happy eventually. But yeah, we've got. Let's get started. Gav, what do you make of the game, mate?
I don't think we can say much else other than that was just amazing. Okay. I'm still in shock, actually. I don't think it's actually sunk in yet just how brutal we were and how. It's a tighter performance you expect to see against us rather than see us put in. It kind of makes all the rubbish days worth it as well because when things like this happen and it totally throws you off and it just makes you so happy, doesn't it? And watching the game back, I've watched it probably 20, 30 times, I'm not even lying, like that's not just the highlights either, I've watched the full 90. It just shows you, doesn't it? Like whenever we do win, you can't get enough of it, and it just makes you wonder how good things could be if we had a good team that done this more often, because we were just amazing at the weekend from start to finish for me. I mean, saying that, we did start the game quite ropey. I thought neither team really asserted themselves from the off, and it took a while for us to get going. It took a while for likes of Oviedo to get going, actually. I thought he was outstanding, but for the first 10 minutes or so, he was just settling in. Once we got that first goal, though, I think it was around 8 minutes in, it just set us on the path. I knew we were going to win from that point. I mean, I know Palace have got a decent squad and they are capable of beating anybody because they have the likes of Benteke and Zaha, and if you don't shut players like that down, they're going to torture you. But fortunately for us, we were just prepared. I don't think Palace knew what to expect with Sunderland. I think they thought that we were just going to turn up and they were just going to win, and it was going to be simple. You know, you saw Sam Allardyce toddling down the touchline, dancing.
That was awesome.
You know, it just that. Well, as soon as I saw that, I thought he's totally not taking this seriously, because if he was, he would realise his team are in the shit, and he really needs to beat us. And he wouldn't be dancing down the touchline. You know, one win in midweek doesn't make up for the fact that he's had a really poor start of life there. And I know some might say I'm overdoing it with that, like, but. To be honest, it showed me that they weren't prepared. I didn't feel that Palace looked prepared. They weren't able to deal with our defensive threats, which were corny from the corner. They weren't able to deal with Defoe. I thought that Tompkins was awful for two of the goals as well. The first one, he gets out-jumped by Lamine Kone, and then the way he gets turned for our last is just embarrassing for a Premier League defender. From our perspective, it was just great to catch a team off guard and really, you know, put the boot in.
It was awesome, wasn't it? I mean, Lamine Kone was like as solid as I've ever seen him. He was absolutely immense. I mean, he's just bullied people. I thought Palace looked They look quite disjointed, don't they? As a side, they don't look very balanced. You mentioned Oviedo. I mean, what a debut. I mean, in stark contrast to Patrick Van Aanholt for Palace. Like, I mean, he gave away the free kick in the run-up to our first goal, didn't he? I mean, Lamin Kone, it's an unbelievable finish. I mean, it's a striker's finish. It's clinical. I mean, Jermaine Defoe was just... I'm not sure I've ever seen a better goal scorer for us. That's including Super Kev. Like, I mean, he's so clinical. I mean, maybe the keeper should do a tad better with Jermaine's first, but the second one, I mean, he has Tompkins on toast, and it's just an unbelievable finish. And Didier Ndong was just... I mean, he looks a completely different player since he's come back. He's quick. He's full of energy. I mean, he's always been full of energy, but he seems to now want to pick up the ball, and he moves a bit with it. And Sunderland were just outstanding, especially in the first half. They were just absolutely class.
What do you take from it, Mickey?
I think that Crystal Palace reminded me of Sunderland in a lot of ways, the kind of typical Sunderland performances we're associated with seeing. So I think there was a lot of kind of aimless diagonal balls into the box, which we just caught with all day, which was really pleasing. As has been touched on earlier, Corney was dominant throughout. O'Shea, before he came off, kind of coasted through the game. Oviedo nullified the threat of Zaha in the first half. And as I say, it was just really good for once to see a team like Palace struggle to break us down, and to see how well we dealt with that aerial threat, because previously in the season, we haven't dealt with direct clear like that.
Yeah, I completely agree there, actually. It was, I mean, I certainly think we got, I wouldn't say lucky, because I agree with you all in the sense that Palace looked like they underestimated us completely, and that's probably more directly Allardyce's fault than the players themselves. I think he's obviously, he's an opinionated man. He's made his mind up already about who he thinks is going down, who he thinks is staying up. I think we'll surprise him. I mean, it's early days, I've got to say that. Obviously, the game was fantastic. I was in a state of shock. I was half in and out of my seat at the same time, especially those three goals in, 6 minutes, wasn't it? That was immense. Seeing something like that, I couldn't believe it. So
we've seen that loads, Damo, just not for us.
Exactly, yeah. It's making it all the more shocking. But yeah. Talking about the players, I thought Oviedo had a fantastic debut. He was a quality player. He is a quality player, judging from that. I thought as well, Gibson, when he came on, I mean, it's sort of a quiet role to play, really, but at the same time, there was no hesitation there. There were no mistakes when it came to these short passes, and he seemed like the sort of player that he was described as, that he could string passes together from the midfield. He could make play happen just with his accuracy, which, I mean, obviously that was in a short supply, and it wasn't as spectacular as in Dong, for example, who... I mean, you say since he got back, he's become phenomenal. But Gav said, I think, earlier in the week about it, he's been better. He's been getting steadily better and better since we signed him. Even when we first had him, and no one really, everyone the evaluation or the transfer money we paid for him, they had that stuck in their head. So they were expecting this sterling performance, this standout goal-scoring midfielder, all of a sudden young lad, pacey, tricky, something like that, and they didn't get it. But statistically, he's been very strong for us anyway. He's been one of our best players since we signed him for the majority of the games he's been involved in. But talking about Ndong, that goal, man, that was something else. That completely took me by surprise. I mean,
we've been calling for him to take more shots for ages, haven't we? Yeah. It's an unbelievable strike, and it's on his weaker foot as well, isn't it? He's so tenacious to win the ball in the first place. He just makes that midfield look so much more balanced with his energy. Jack Rodwell alongside him. It's a real shame. I mean, obviously, you all know I'm not his biggest fan, but it's a real shame to see him go off injured, because the last two games, he's actually seemed to have asserted himself on them a lot more than he has done.
Yeah. I think he did against Liverpool as well, Jim.
I think,
and the coincidence there is that he played alongside Didier and Dong in that game, and Dong went off to the African Cup of Nations, didn't he, after that, and then all of a sudden his form dips. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when you put somebody next to him who's busy and does the crap jobs on the pitch, running around, winning the ball back, tracking back, I think then you will see more from the likes of Rodwell and Gibson, actually, because Gibson's not a grafter. He's quite a luxury player. He'll get the ball and he'll pass it forwards for you, and he'll try and dictate play. I do think that when he came on, the game kind of suited him. The pace at that time, we were just happy to sit back and protect our lead at that point, and it really did suit him, didn't it?
It did. I think I had that written down. I mean, it's just, it's very easy to come on at 4-0, you know, and he had a lot of time. I mean, he was neat and tidy, like, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't scared to move the ball. I mean, he moved it forward a lot of the times. But I think he's going to need probably a few more weeks to get up to full fitness and a match condition, really. I'd like to see him come in for Seb Larsson, who was all right. I mean, he put in a good shift, but he actually started the game pretty poorly, didn't he? I mean, Sam was saying he should have been sent off, and he could have easily have been sent off if we're honest with ourselves. I mean, I wouldn't have sent him off, but we've seen both of those challenges been booked before for them. So he was probably a bit lucky to still be on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that sort of passion, but I suppose the question remains, is it passion or is it a mistake? I mean, the trouble with Seb Larsson is he's been with us for quite some time now. He's been with us so long, and as a regular, you know what I mean? Never as anything spectacular. I mean, apart from his occasional free kicks, which are sadly fewer and far between now as times go by. I just don't see, he doesn't really impact himself on the squad, does he? He doesn't make that much of a difference. And I think for all it's lovely to have someone who is willing and able and ready to take up or fill that role in the squad, that's pretty much all. It isn't so much a role, it's more like a spot, like an empty space, and it's like, oh, well, we'll put Seb there, exactly, like filler. And I think, I mean, probably getting ahead of myself now, because we don't know where the season's going to end or where we're going to be, but certainly that's a position, his spot should be up for grabs in the very near future.
Hopefully we'll see, I mean, see Catamol come back sooner rather than later. I'm sure, I mean, there's a couple of social media clips coming from the club in the past couple of weeks, and it looks like he's, you know, nearing like full training, I guess. So it'd be phenomenal to have him back, because if we can have him and Ndong alongside each other, and then either a Rodwell or, you know, maybe Gibson if he gets up to full fitness, you know, it starts to look like a midfield which can, you know, probably control a game more than it certainly could, you know, a couple of months ago. And we need that, because when you have a player like Ndong, and when the midfield looks a lot stronger like it did, you, when you have players like Adnan Januzaj, who was fantastic at the weekend, I thought Moyes got it absolutely bang on by putting him in the side instead of Barini. I mean, he got two assists, and he gave Palace a torrid time. And I think when you've got a more solid controlling central midfield in there, you can allow players like Januzaj to maybe drift in and out of the game. But when he is in the game, you saw the impact he has.
Yeah, just quickly on Larsson there. I did think at one point he should have been taken off, because although I thought the third there, his yellow card was harsh actually. After that, he just looked like he was going to get sent off, didn't he? And he was marauding around, fouling people. And I think had he made one more, he would have been off. So it was a big call from the manager actually to keep him on the pitch. I was advocating taking him off. I'm quite glad he didn't, though, because he had a really good game after he'd been booked, particularly in the second half. He helped to slow it down a lot. He set off Januzaj for Defoe's first, I think, which was a great pass to pull the ball out wide. So, you know, it paid off. It was good management in that sense. I mean, I know we do give Moyes a bit of stick on this podcast, but I think the decision to keep Larsson on the pitch was a big one, because had we went down to 10 men at 1-0, which was entirely possible, it could have completely changed the you know, the whole complexion of the game.
I think I agree with you in that sense, but I think it was too much of a risk to take, to be honest. I think in that regard he was lucky. But we're moving to Twitter, questions as per usual. Got one from Daniel Parker. Are people finally starting to realise Ndong's worth, particularly after the AFCON exposed just how much we missed him? What do you think about that, Mickey?
Yeah, definitely. The point I would like to make is that I think at times we forget that the lad is just 22 years old. And you look at Honeyman when he came into the team, and he was seen as almost a revelation. which I know was based on how rubbish the other players were. But Ndong, when you look at the way he can dominate a game, he can, as you say, he breaks up the play really well. His off the ball works excellent. His passing's not great, but he never hides. He always wants to get involved in the game. As you say, the other day, he had a shot on him. And then you compare that to the likes of Honeyman, who is the same age as him. And again, he's just a completely different player.
Hmm. Yeah, that's valid. I can see your point there. I mean, people do quickly forget how young that player is. And as I said earlier, the having that transfer fee attached to you, I mean, it happens all the time with bigger clubs with much bigger transfer fees, do you know what I mean? But as soon as the words transfer record were bandied around, do you know, that was it. And it was everything was expected of this player. I mean, to be honest, we're all fans, so we're all probably partially guilty of it ourselves. Do you know what I mean? If they don't hit the ground running, it's very frustrating. But I imagine it's equally as frustrating for them. I think certainly people are starting to realise now. I mean, you've only got to look up statistically what he does and what he brings to the team to see that he's certainly worth the money, considering we paid, what, £1 million up front for him anyway?
Yeah, that's the key point, Demo, isn't it? Because everyone bands around the record. I mean, we say go on about it most weeks, and because, obviously, it had that in inverted commas record transfer fee, I think if they'd come out and said we'd paid what we actually did for him, people would be giving him a lot more time. But as soon as you have that, in inverted commas, record transfer fee, people are very, very quick to judge. And as Mickey said, he's a young lad, isn't he? And if he continues on this trajectory of improvement, we could have a decent player in our hands, you know? I mean, he's the one thing we've always said about Ndong is he doesn't shy away from wanting the ball. And I think that's quite key, especially in a team that largely underperform. You need someone who wants the ball. You don't want someone like Jack Colback who completely hides, you know. So let's hope it continues.
With Ndong as well, I know the fee of $13 million is obviously it kind of reminds of when Craig Gordon was here, and every time he played, it was like, well, he cost us £9 million, you know. Oh, he was our record buy, and it overshadowed his actual ability for a long time. And it would be good if people were more aware of actually what we did pay for Ndong. I know we've spoke about it a lot on this show. It's pretty much common knowledge now, but I don't know, the general view of most Sunderland fans is that he cost us a lot of money, when in truth, in football terms, he didn't. And that really has to be taken into account, because it's all incentivized. Is that the word? Incentivized. What we end up paying for the guy is dependent on how well he actually does here. So we've took a bit of a risk on him, really. Mm. And for me, it's a risk worth taking. You look at what his raw abilities are. He's great at passing short. He's not so great at passing long, but that can come with time. He's got great immense drive. His energy is tremendous. He's enthusiastic. He always wants the ball, like you just said yourself before. You know, there's a lot to work with there, especially in the Premier League. We've just seen Leicester win a Premier League with a centre midfield player who did that job for them. And then as soon as he come out of the team, the true ability's been shown, really, because those type of players are worth their weight in gold if you can find them. Now, I'm not saying Didier Ndong's N'Golo Kanté by any stretch. What I am saying is, to a team like us, if you can find a player who can do all of those things, it makes it worth it. And I've said it all season with Ndong, I think he's been given an unfair ride. I think some of the stick he got early doors was pathetic. Even when he was playing well, people still wanted to slag him off. People still wanted to stick the boot in and say, oh, well, he didn't do this, well, he didn't do that well. But ignoring the basic stuff, which is the amount of ground he covers, the amount he gets stuck in, the amount that he just does for the team. We complain about us not having enough people who care. Yeah, you've got a lad there who you could never level at him, because he tries his best every week. So I was over the moon to see him play well, because I've been saying for a long time, I don't like to be one of those I told you so, but I just think that if people had gave him the time to develop earlier, maybe we'd have seen more of these performances rather than seeing a player who looked fairly scared and
it was
not
nerves,
ready.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Just one last point then, Ndong, before we move on.
Cracker. You're good to go, buddy.
Well, the point I want to make, though, Ndong, he came into an absolutely horrendous set of circumstances. Like, the morale at the club was absolutely at rock bottom. The manager was already being questioned really early on. there was nobody else who was really stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility. And he was in a new league which he hadn't played in, a country where he didn't speak the language. And I just think that people were far too quick to judge him, and now we're seeing like what happens if you give people a bit of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. We're talking about our... talking about players, I suppose we can talk about a former player, Patrick Van Aanholt. We've got a question on Twitter. Does PVO not being in the team contribute to our clean sheets, or just a coincidence? I'll field that one for a little bit. Yeah, I think there is certainly a bit of both. We saw him concede for another team. We saw him allow our striker to get past him rather than someone else's striker to get past us. So I think there's definitely there's a bit of coincidence, and there's a bit of the fact that we all know he can't defend. Do you know what I mean? But that's the reality. I was saying on the last episode when we sold him, I was saying that we needed to replace his attacking abilities. But not once, even those who were saying, well, we need a replacement for this, we need to do something with this 14 million, no one was saying it was because he's a good defender. So, absolutely, it was the biggest problem for potentially for our defensive line, was particularly when you look at how Oviedo played in comparison. And he'd been described also as a fullback that focused more on attack than defence. I'd heard that said about him. But that didn't strike me as the case. Do you know what I mean? I think he performed admirably. And I think he's Patrick Van Aanholt defensively is a shadow of him just on that one performance.
Well, I would like to see more of Oviedo, but I mean, I do agree that he didn't strike me as a player who was weak defensively. I mean, just look at the tackles he made in the lead up to two of our goals, you know. He got stuck in the whole game. Zaha had an absolute nightmare against him. Got to the point where they just stopped attacking that side of the pitch because they couldn't get through him. And it was as good as a defensive performance I've seen all season. It was as good a debut as I've seen. I mean, for a left-back, does it get much better than that, really? I think he got forward when he could, but he definitely sat in more, which was probably tactical. I would have thought we might see more in games where he's not expected to defend as much, or, you know, man mark or winger, because Zaha is their biggest threat. And the key really to stopping them was to stop him, wasn't it? And that was pretty much Oviedo's job. So, you know, hopefully at the weekend against Southampton, we'll see what he can do going forward as well, you know, because by all accounts, he is very good going forward. I'm very impressed based off what I've seen, though.
Yeah, I guess we've got to kind of temper expectations a bit, because remember Mankilo's debut against Saints, we were saying the same about him.
True.
Look where that went. But, I mean, you're looking at Patrick Van Aanholt. I mean, I said previously, I mean, we had two clean sheets all season, and now we have back-to-back clean sheets once he's left. I don't think it's a coincidence at all. I think, like, we're well shot of him. I don't think he was welcome in the dressing room. I think his attitude stinks. Yeah, we're well shot of him.
Yeah, I think I would add to that as well. Yeah, that we heard rumours of some sort of dressing room bust up. Not sure what the actual official stance on that is, whether that's true or not. Certainly, I think we've heard enough of it to believe that he wasn't liked or something like that. He certainly didn't get along with a few players. I heard something about him fighting with Defoe. I mean, I don't know if there is anything to that. But yeah, certainly when you consider the last two games, purely on the fact that he's not there, is that something that contributes to the overall team spirit? Do they feel more like a team unit? Perhaps. I'm not sure.
It might do. I mean, no one wants to work with someone who's sat there moody. I mean, Callum said it a few weeks back, didn't he? Where, like, you know, if your boss is well up for it and your boss is positive, you feel more positive. I'm sure it's very much the same with teammates. If you're looking around the dressing room and you see someone who's got the face on because someone's tapping him up, some of us has been tapping him up, you know, not having that person around there, that can only help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going back to the questions, I think we'll do one more question, certainly. And it is, I suppose, it's the overarching question that we're all sitting here with on our minds. Basically, it's from Lee Charters. He's asking, do we need to be conserved, or is this a genuine turn in our season? What do you reckon, Gav?
It definitely feels like a turn in our season. I think when I think back to previous years when we've stayed up, the Great Escape season, for instance, even last year, there were defining moments where things seemed to turn for us. And for me, this is the type of win that does that for you. Obviously, it's impossible to say right now because we need to see another performance against Southampton where we win the game because, you know, the grand scheme of things, the 3 points and the performance was brilliant, but all it's done really is pull us closer to the teams around us. You know, Hull won, Swansea have been in some decent form recently, which has given them some ground. So we did need to win. It was a must win in my eyes. But obviously it's got to be followed up, hasn't it? We can't just get beat off Southampton now because that kind of makes this whole, the way that we all feel right now, it kind of makes it irrelevant if we don't win. And not to put, you know, a negative slant on it, but we do really need a positive result next weekend, and that's not a draw. It's a win because we need to go on a run of games. I said this off chat to people. I've said this to friends. In every year that we've stayed up recently, we've had a good run of games. I didn't feel before Saturday that this side was capable of it, but then again, I've always said I've learned not to write Sunderland off because we've been in worse positions than this and stayed up. So from that perspective, yeah, it could be a defining moment, but it means nothing, like I say. It means nothing at all if we don't win next weekend, or at least show that we're capable of winning.
Yeah, I mean, Moyes has said a couple of times, hasn't he, that we need to go on another run. I mean, we went on a run a few months back where the Bournemouth results seemed to like kick us into gear, and then we got 3 or 4 wins and everything seemed to pick up a little bit. We need that again. We need to, as Gav said, we need to beat Saints. Because there's a whole weekend off after that with the FA Cup. So if we can go into the weekend after beating Southampton, you know, you're taking a real good feel-good feeling onto the training pitch for a couple of weeks, and that can massively help for this back-end run. You know, I mean, after that, we've got Everton away and then Man City at home. I mean, you wouldn't rule out Moyes getting... being very hard to beat and maybe getting a point at Everton. Man City at home, I mean, that's almost a free hit, isn't it? You know, you expect to get beat. If you can get anything, that's great. And after that, we've got Borough, Burnley, Watford, Leicester. That run of 4 games, absolutely massive. That defines our season, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, just to jump in. On that as well, after that little break that we've got, Pickford's back, which, you know, if you can win the next game and then have that in your mind, knowing that, you know, one of your most important players is coming back into the team, it's, you know, the what it does for confidence is amazing. So yeah, that performance at the weekend has to be carried on. We need to win 2 or 3 more games in the next 4 or 5 for me. Otherwise it means nothing.
Go on, Mickey.
I just think with Southampton, intent is going to be so important, because if you cast your minds back to the Leicester game, where for once we did come out on the front foot, we attacked Leicester and it got the crowd really motivated early on. And even though we didn't score when we had that period of pressure, we still went on to win the game. And I think on Saturday it needs to be a similar vein. I remember in the previous run of form, we went to Swansea after a few good results, and we went there, we set up really defensively. And for me, we just can't afford to do that. If we want to put a run of form together, we need to start like with attacking intent and like get the crowd going and just get everyone pulling in the same direction.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely. I mean, going to Twitter as well, just for the last question we've got time for. It's from D Sharp. Moyes to keep same formation against Southampton, 3 at the back. What would you make of that, James? Do you think that's likely to happen? Do you think that was something that we're going to see more of?
I'd hope so. I think Moyes got it pretty much bang on. You know, I thought we looked really solid. I think the fact that Djilobodji's not playing makes a massive difference, because I think he's a bit of a clown. As long as we can keep someone like Lamine Kone fit, I think we've got a really, really good chance of putting a good run together. I mean, I've been probably a bit hasty to question his attitude at times, but I guess right now, if you're David Moyes, you've got to say to him, look, prove yourself and play the way we know you can for the next 6 months, and you could end up at a really, really good side. Just we really need to keep him fit, I think.
I think the other players around him step up when he's there. I think he just brings such a calm and, you know, he's got like a calm and presence with the other players. Denier looks a better player with him. O'Shea looks a better player with him. Billy Jones had a real bad spell of form. And then once Coney come back in the team, playing on the right side of that defence alongside him, it just seems to have made Jones a better player. So I think that's important, with keeping him fit. I know we've spent time this year talking on the podcast about, like, you know, his attitude stinking and him not putting enough effort in games, but he looks pretty focused now. And, you know, we've got to be fair and say that he's pretty much our most important player than the Defoe right now, because, you know, as a defensive unit, we've been awful for large parts of this season. It's no coincidence that when he comes back into the team, we keep 2 clean sheets.
Mm. He looked motivated, didn't he? He looks different to what he did. I think maybe the fact that January's been gone and he knows right now, you know, I'm here for the rest of the season. Get your head down. Because honestly, if he plays the way we know he can, I think he could end up at an Arsenal or somewhere. I think he's that good. I think you look at someone like Arsenal, they're crying out for a centre-half like him.
That's an interesting point. Sad, well, we'll expand on that and see what happens. Hopefully not anytime soon. Yeah, that's all we've got time for, really. I mean, we'll round it up maybe with some quick predictions. What do you reckon, Gav, against Southampton?
I do think we'll win. I don't think it'll be as catastrophic as it was at the weekend, where we'll score 3 or 4. I think it might be a close 1-0. But I do think we'll win. I think Southampton are a good side, but, you know, who are capable of beating anybody. But at the same time, they're prone to losing daft games, and they haven't got the best centre halves at now. You know, they sold Font, Van Dijk's injured. They're on about signing Casares, the free transfer. So, you know, I fancy us. I do. I fancy Defoe to score against anyone. If we can get the ball to them in the way that we did at the weekend, then I think we'll win.
Fair enough. I'm going to plump for a similar thing. Maybe a 2-1 for us. What about you, James?
3-1 Sunderland. 3-1 Sunderland, Jermaine Defoe hat-trick. Easy as pie.
Mickey?
I'll continue with the positivity. I'm going to say a 2-1 to Sunderland. Like Gav says, we've got to take advantage of their defensive, like, last
frailties. At the minute. Yeah, absolutely.
Frailties.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Well, thanks for joining me today, lads. It was good. Nice to have something to celebrate and talk about that isn't completely horribly depressing. Well, yeah, thanks for joining us too, to our listeners. That's all we have time for. Join us again next week for what will hopefully be another weekend of celebration following our match against Southampton. Don't forget you can subscribe through the Acast app on iTunes, and this is the Roper Report signing off.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.